The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Shavua Tov, pretty good, thank you. I was just reading a very interesting article that I thought I would share with you before we get into the main things that we wanted to talk about. But there was an article that I read which suggests that the demographic nature of Israel is undergoing this change because the fertility rate of Jews in Israel is actually increasing, while the fertility rate of Muslims, Israeli Muslims living in Israel, is decreasing. And they are almost on a par at the moment with the statistics showing that Jewish women are expected during their lifetimes to have an average of 3.17 children, while Muslim Israelis are expected to have 3.20 children, so almost the same number. Mm. And this is kind of just sounds just like numbers and statistics that are being thrown about, but it's very, very significant because we've always had this discussion about how the Muslims will eventually be the majority in Israel with their fertility rates. And this is now going to show that all of those kind of doomsday scenarios that were painted about allowing our democracy to take its natural course and allowing the Muslims, the Arabs, to have a vote in Israel will ultimately ensure that the Jews are displaced from Israel. And this has been kind of the doomsday prediction for many, many years, almost from the founding of the state. And yet now the fertility rates are suggesting that all of those doomsday predictions may not actually come to fruition. Who will know?
Very, very interesting. In fact, so the what is also interesting to me is always to look at the, you know, the same people that were concerned about that Israel will lose its nature as a Jewish state if these demographics change. But there's also concern within the Jewish community themselves because you've got significantly higher birth rates amongst the ultra-Orthodox Jews as there are in secular Jews.
Of course. So, I mean, those blanket numbers obviously hide a lot of information below the surface, which obviously requires a lot more discussion. And this was really just supposed to be thrown in before we talk about the real stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just an interesting thing in general. And it gives a lot of food for thought. And, you know, it means that we can still continue to have a Jewish state with its Jewish identity and its Jewish nature and be fully democratic, which is obviously what we really want to do, and still, you know, not lose the Jewish identity that we have in the state of Israel.
Very interesting. All right, let's talk about politics. Can we get a coalition update? Is Israel any closer to having a government?
In short, no. In fact, you know, nothing really significant is taking place over the weekend. Lots and lots of slanging backwards and forwards, predictions that Prime Minister Netanyahu might call a primary within the Likud, which I found to be a fascinating concept, that now that he is, you know, established as the leader of the Likud, well established, he's going to call a primary in order to invite those people who might wish to challenge his leadership of the Likud to step forward. And I'm not really sure what he was expecting to achieve by this, whether he hoped that the primary would simply re-elect him in a very, very powerful way and demonstrate therefore to the president and to other politicians within the framework that there is no alternative to him being the prime minister in the event that the Likud is in the coalition government. Because of course there's lots of speculation about the fact that ultimately a government will need to be formed without him. And certainly I am one of those people who predicted and continue to predict that the next government that Israel eventually will have will not include Netanyahu, because I think that he is too divisive at the moment in terms of the ability to form a government. And the moment he steps aside, I think we'll have a unity government relatively easily put together, and he is really the one dividing factor. Having said that, his party has elected him to be the leader, and I think that his idea of calling a primary was simply to reinforce that point rather than anything else. However, of course, there was always the risk that he was going to be shown to be weaker than he thinks within the eyes of the Likud voting people. Anyway, that idea went away over the weekend. All of a sudden that evaporated, and apparently there will not be a Likud primary. So as of right now, we're still going through the 4-day pre-trial hearing, pre-indictment hearing for Netanyahu and all of the cases against him. We are on day four today. This is the last day. Not much information has come out other than the fact that they will be covering other cases other than the Beza case number 4000. That will be covered today, but nothing really more to report about that. So we have no idea whether he's nearer or further away from being indicted or not. And the whole action of forming a government seems to have gone on ice for now, with a lot of people saying to Netanyahu, listen, if you can't form a government and you don't look likely to form a government, then you have the responsibility to return the mandate to the president to allow him to take those next steps even before the expiry of the 3 weeks which he was given. Because if it looks certain already now that within 3 weeks a government won't be formed, maybe the mandate should already be returned. Now, there was discussion within the Likud about returning that mandate. It hasn't happened. The discussions that the Likud have had with Avigdor Lieberman's Israel Beitenu party seem to have gone nowhere, as could have probably been predicted. So, in short, we are no closer to forming a government than we were when we spoke last week on Thursday.
Absolutely insane that this is, that this has been almost an entire year without an effective government.
And there are so many consequences for not having a government. I mean, I know that we do have a caretaker government in place, and of course the original cabinet still continues to function, and all that stuff. But, for example, no new judges can be appointed because the committee that's responsible to appoint new judges to the courts is not functioning at the moment as a result of there being no government. So we have no new judges being appointed. There is no new budget that can be passed. So although we do have a budget which we're operating in for the year 2019, we're almost at the end of 2019, and for 2020 we have no budget. So the most likely scenario is that Israel will go into 2020 without an approved budget. And there are certain consequences for that. No increased spending, no emergency funding. There's so many different consequences to not having a functioning Knesset and not having a functioning government. This is really, really not good in general for Israel right now.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. Not surprised by that at all. All right, let's talk about this other situation that seems to be developing, and that is that Arab Israelis have been protesting against violence in the Arab sector. What is the cause of this violence? What's going on here?
Well, unfortunately, there have been numerous murders within the Arab-Israeli sector. 68 Arab Israelis have been murdered in 2019 already. And in September alone, 11 people were murdered. This is a very, very surprising, astonishing fact, because Israel as a general is an enormously safe place for people to roam around, in spite of, you know, this notion that Israel is under threat and at war and people are dying all the time. That's really not true. And it's on the streets of Israel, it's generally an incredibly safe place for people to go around. And when, you know, visitors come here, particularly from South Africa, and see young girls roaming around the streets in the middle of the night without any issue at all, without any fear at all, it comes as a huge surprise to see the level of safety that goes on in Israel streets in general. And yet in the Arab sector, we have this major issue going on with huge amounts of violence, gang warfare, really, internal violence that's going on within the Arab sector. And of course, the government and the police are being dragged into this for various reasons. For the first one, many of the Arab leaders are accusing the police of not doing enough to get involved in taking control of the gang violence and the murders that are going on within the Arab sector. And they are saying that some of the police might even be complicit in supporting some of these Arab gangs, allowing them to acquire arms and ammunition, which is illegal. So the police are even accused here of being complicit to these crimes. On the other hand, the police are saying that going into the Arab gangs within the Arab towns and cities is not a safe place for police in general. It's not a safe place for Jewish policemen, and it's certainly not a safe place for Arab policemen, because the Arabs, of course, are part of the community, and the moment Arab policemen are seen to be getting involved within gang warfare, they may well risk their own lives and the lives lives of their families by getting involved in this. So there is a major issue that we have going on at the moment within the Arab-Israeli sector, with huge amounts of violence and with murders and with gangs who are operating fairly freely, as seems to be the case. And now there is a huge focus. Prime Minister Netanyahu has, of course, waded in, making comments condemning the violence in the Arab sector. And, of course, Ahmed Tibi, the Arab member of Knesset, has accused the government of not doing enough to address the Arab violence, in spite of he says that he raised this issue with Prime Minister Netanyahu already back in 2015, and he received promises from the Prime Minister that action would be taken. Unfortunately, not enough action has been taken. Right. So unfortunately, within the Arab towns and cities, we have violence and we have gang warfare and we have people whose lives are at risk. And admittedly, most of the people who've been murdered are people who are actually involved in the gang warfare rather than innocent civilians on the sides. But nonetheless, it's not a statistic that we're very proud of. And it's going to be interesting to see whether the police are genuinely able to get a grip on this and to really take control of the violence and to reduce the number of murders that are taking place at the moment.
Right, very, very frightening. And let's just hope that they can take some control of this. All right, finally, it's been made public that the Israeli government is pursuing the signing of non-aggression pacts with Gulf Arab countries. What's the significance of this?
Well, I mean, Israel traditionally has been unfriendly, or let's put it the other way around. Arab countries have traditionally been unfriendly towards Israel because the Arab world decided as a bloc that they would not recognize Israel, that they would oppose Israel from the outset. And that really is the situation until this very day, except for the fact, of course, that we know that Egypt and Jordan have departed from this pact, and they independently have signed peace agreements with Israel, and we have full diplomatic relations with both Jordan and with Egypt. But beyond that, Israel has no official diplomatic relations with any other Arab countries. Having said that, the relations with Arab countries has really been developing over time. And even though it's not official and even though diplomats haven't been exchanged, there's still been a great deal of interaction between Israel and Arab countries across the board, including the great Saudi Arabia. And of course, many other North African Arab countries and indeed even Gulf Arab countries. And that's been recognized and made a little more formal by the announcement by Foreign Minister Israel Katz when he confirmed earlier this week, yesterday morning, that Israel is currently promoting an initiative to try to sign non-aggression agreements with a number of Gulf Arab countries. And I think that that is the natural next step in terms of Israel's developing relationship with these Arab countries. This notion that Arab countries in Israel are at war with each other and there is no interaction and there can never be peace and friendship is kind of being pushed aside now. And I think what's pleasing is that these Arab countries, through the new generations and over time, have come to understand that Israel is not going anywhere anytime soon. And so therefore they have the choice either to continue the standoff and suffer whatever consequences come out of that, or to embrace the fact that Israel can be a friendly country towards these Arab countries and that there is no reason why that we shouldn't be cooperating. And when you look at it in the context of Iran, it takes on even more significance because Iran, of course, being a Shia country, is not particularly friendly with the Sunni Muslim countries. And those Sunni Muslim countries, including Saudi Arabia, are now seeking friendship with Israel in order to form an anti-Iran pact, because those Sunni Muslim countries are feeling probably at least as at risk and perhaps even more at risk than Israel feels against the threat from Iran. And so there is a natural friendship that is developing between Sunni Muslim countries and Israel in their quest to try somehow to control this aggression that's being shown, terrorism and nuclear weapon development and all of the other aggressive activities that are going on in Iran. And so therefore, the non-aggression pacts, I think, is the next step along the path to full diplomatic relations with these Gulf Arab countries, and certainly is a formalization of friendship cooperation against the threat that Iran presents within the Middle East.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's hope that this continues to move in that direction. Anthony Ruck, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock. And we'll chat to you same time, same place tomorrow morning. It'll also be interesting to hear what happens in Israel over Yom Kippur. I saw last year, in fact, for the first time, that Israeli airspace shuts down. So that'll be interesting to hear more about that as well. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 FM. Good morning.